Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world, welcome to the Cross in the Desert. We are speaking hope and freedom to Iran today. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, welcoming everyone in the chat room this morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule, wherever you're at in the world, to join me on the broadcast today. Very excited to let you know today that my very special guest, who has been a guest several times before, Annie Cyrus, will be here this morning. She is recently on a new project. She has assumed the role of National Director of American Truth Project. She's going to talk all about this new role. Of course, you know her as the director-producer of the Glassoff Gang and The Unknown. And Annie keeps us informed about what's happening in the world of Islam and Iran, and tells us the things we need to know to educate us about our role in speaking out against this ideology and speaking out for the human rights of women all over the world. It's always a joy to have her. I know we're going to have a good time together. Well, speaking of Iran this morning, the first message I got on my page was from my dear friend Shabnam Asadali, an Iranian human rights activist who spent, I think it was 8 months in Evin prison just a couple of years after the revolution began in Iran. Can you imagine? I think she was 14, 15 years old when she went to Evin prison, and by the grace of God, she was spared the torture, I mean the physical torture, and managed to be released after 8 months. But at any rate, let me tell you what she posted. She posted a story, and this is nothing new. It's nothing shocking, but it's just utterly unacceptable. Iran's morality police have beaten and detained a 14-year-old girl for wearing ripped jeans. Now, for those of you who are fairly new to the broadcast and maybe not as well informed about Iranian things that go on over there, I don't know what to say sometimes. There is an Islamic dress code. Women have to go out publicly wearing hijab. They really prefer manteau, chador, but most Iranian women, they wear the jeans, of course. They cover it up really well, and they go out wearing their little headscarf or veil, if you will. And, of course, a lot of times the ghasti or shad will pull them aside. You have improper hijab. You're showing too much skin. You've got makeup on, or in this case, the girl that had the ripped jeans. They beat her. They detained her. They punished her. Let's call her name Zara. We don't know her real name. She was celebrating her birthday in Shiraz with her friends. Here come the morality police, the ghasti or shad. There were already two women and two men in the huge van. That they come around in this van and they patrol the streets looking for violations of the dress code. And they pushed her in, beat her. And, of course, the big criminal act was wearing ripped jeans. And she had to write and sign a pledge that she would not wear this again and adhere to Iran's strict interpretation of the modest dress code in the future. And Zara says, quote, "I still carry the bruises sustained from their beatings on my face. I still feel their pressure on my arm and my ribs still hurt." This was, according to Zara, the worst day of her life, and it seemed like the world ended for her that day. I just want to say a couple of words about this. I think Annie and I will talk about this a little when she comes on board in about 25 minutes. I don't want to hear a single whimper or complaint from these American feminists ever again. Remember January 21st when they all assembled in groups all over the country, all over the cities, protesting Donald Trump, President Trump, and then whining and complaining about the violation of their so-called human rights. And as I said before, and I'll say again, I welcome them. As a First Amendment person, you have every right to sound the alarm, complain, do all you want. You have that freedom. All of us have that First Amendment right. That's not what I'm mad about. I'm mad about the fact that these feminists won't speak up for women like Zara in Iran, who cannot celebrate her birthday and go out and have fun because of the clothing she wears. And not only is she arrested, but she's beaten. Why won't these women feminists, their sisters are suffering all over the world and they can't even remember and think of them? So I hope somehow through your participation on my page and sharing these stories that we will somehow reach these women to get them to think about the worst case scenarios in the world. They can go ahead and complain. That's fine. They just need to speak up for women like Zara, who are absolutely ignored on the world scene. And then I hear about them and their complaints. They have no idea of what they're talking about. And that is my rant and rave this morning. I want to go on to the subject and the matter of our program today. Annie and I will be discussing the fake media. And just recently, President Trump had a historic meltdown about the press. And I want you to hear this special report from Sean Hannity of Fox News on that event, February 16th. I'm sure you remember. Let's listen right now on The Cross in the Desert.
So last night we explained in great, great detail how the abusively biased left-wing press is doing you, the American people, such a great disservice by not telling you the truth, by having an agenda, and in turn, they have created what I called last night a massive informational crisis. Now today, after endless attacks from the alt-left propaganda media, President Trump is now fighting back and in a big way by calling out the press directly and also setting the record straight. Take a look.
Am I making this presentation directly to the American people with the media present, which is an honor to have you this morning, because many of our nation's reporters and folks will not tell you the truth and will not treat the wonderful people of our country with the respect that they deserve. The press has become so dishonest that if we don't talk about it, we are doing a tremendous disservice to the American people. Tremendous disservice. We have to talk about it. to find out what's going on, because the press honestly is out of control. The level of dishonesty is out of control. I'll tell you something. I'll be honest, because I sort of enjoy this back and forth, and I guess I have all my life, but I've never seen more dishonest media than, frankly, the political media. I thought the financial media was much better, much more honest. There's nobody I have more respect for, well, maybe a little bit, but than reporters, than good reporters. It's very important to me, and especially in this position. It's very important. I don't mind bad stories. I can handle a bad story better than anybody, as long as it's true. And, you know, over a course of time, I'll make mistakes and you'll write badly, and I'm okay with that. But I'm not okay when it is fake. I think it should be straight. I think it would be, frankly, more interesting. I know how good everybody's ratings are right now, but I think that'd actually be better. You have a lower approval rate than Congress. I think that's right. I don't know, Peter, is that one right? Because, you know, I think they have lower than Congress. The public isn't, you know, they read newspapers, they see television, they watch. They don't know if it's true or false because they're not involved. I'm involved. I've been involved with this stuff all my life. But I'm involved. So I know when you're telling the truth or when you're not. I just see many, many untruthful things. And I'll tell you what else I see. I see tone, you know, the word tone. The tone is such hatred. I'm really not a bad person, by the way. No, but the tone is such... I do get good ratings, you have to admit that. The tone is such hatred.
Now, President Trump, he did not stop there. He also talked about the massive mess that he has inherited and what he's doing to fix it. Take a look.
I inherited a mess. It's a mess. At home and abroad, a mess. Jobs are pouring out of the country. You see what's going on with all of the companies leaving our country, going to Mexico and other places. Low pay, low wages, mass instability overseas, no matter where you look. The Middle East, a disaster. North Korea, we'll take care of it, folks. We're going to take care of it all. I just want to let you know, I inherited a mess. We've begun preparing to repeal and replace Obamacare. Obamacare is a disaster, folks. It's a disaster. Jobs have already started to surge. Since my election, Ford announced it will abandon its plans to build a new factory in Mexico and will instead invest $700 million in Michigan, creating many, many jobs. And one more thing. I have kept my promise to the American people by nominating a justice of the United States Supreme Court, Judge Neil Gorsuch.
Now, President Trump continued by speaking about Michael Flynn's resignation and the massive amount of leaks coming from the government bureaucracy about his administration. Big problem. Take a look.
Mike Flynn is a fine person, and I asked for his resignation. He respectfully gave it. He is a man who there was a certain amount of information given to Vice President Pence, who's with us today, and I was not happy with the way that information was given. He didn't have to do that because what he did wasn't wrong. What he did in terms of the information he saw, what was wrong was the way that other people, including yourselves in this room, were given that information. Because that was classified information that was given illegally. That's the real problem. And, you know, you can talk all you want about Russia, which was all a, you know, fake news fabricated deal to try and make up for the loss of the Democrats, and the press plays right into it. How does the press get this information that's classified? How do they do it? You know why? Because it's an illegal process, and the press should be ashamed of themselves. But more importantly, the people that gave out the information to the press should be ashamed of themselves.
Now, President Trump also addressed Russia after fake news hit pieces insinuated that he may have direct ties to the country. Watch this.
The Daily New York Times wrote a big, long front page story yesterday. And it was very much discredited, as you know. It's a joke. And the people mentioned the story. I noticed they were on television today saying they never even spoke to Russia. So the three people that they talked about all totally deny it. And I can tell you, speaking for myself, I own nothing in Russia. I have no loans in Russia. I don't have any deals in Russia. President Putin called me up very nicely to congratulate me on the win of the election. He then called me up extremely nicely to congratulate me on the inauguration, which was terrific. But so did many other leaders, almost all other leaders from almost all other countries. So that's the extent. Russia is fake news. Russia, this is fake news put out by the media. The whole Russian thing, that's a ruse. That's a ruse. And by the way, it would be great if we could get along with Russia, just so you understand that. Hillary Clinton did a reset, remember, with the stupid plastic button that made us all look like a bunch of jerks? Here, take a look. He looked at her like, what the hell is she doing with that cheap plastic button? I would love to be able to get along with Russia. Now, you've had a lot of presidents that haven't taken that tack. Look where we are now. Look where we are now.
And finally, while his temporary travel ban executive order is being held up by the most liberal court in the country, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the president made very big news about issuing a new executive order to keep you, the American people, safe. Let's look at this.
We will be issuing a new and very comprehensive order to protect our people, and that'll be done sometime next week, toward the beginning or middle at the latest part. As far as the new order, the new order is going to be very much tailored to the what I consider to be a very bad decision, but we can tailor the order to that decision and get just about everything, in some ways more, but we're tailoring it now to the decision. We have some of the best lawyers in the country working on it, and the new executive order is being tailored to the decision we got down from the court.
All I can say is wow. Now, what we saw today was a historic beatdown of the alt-left propaganda media, and they had it coming. Now, we've been showing you example after example of the press purposely distorting the president's plans and his agenda. It's very refreshing to see a commander-in-chief who will fight back against all the dishonesty, all the smears, set the record straight with you, the American people.
That was an awesome display of President Trump saying to the press, I am in your face. I am tired of your lies. I'm tired of your tactics. You are deplorable. You are fake. And you are lying to the American people. And this is so important that he did this, that he spoke out, and he set the record straight. You know, as you watch the events unfolding since his inauguration and probably before, you see all these protests, these riots at Berkeley and so forth, all over the country at the airports. And some people say, well, this is spontaneous. They didn't like the travel ban. And I have news for you. This is highly orchestrated by former President Barack Obama, and this is very important for you to understand the shadow government that's going on behind the scenes. I have this special report that was on the Fox Business News channel, and it's something you really need to learn about. Here it is right now on The Cross in the Desert.
Well, joining me now, Paul Sperry, New York Post columnist, author of The Great American Bank Robbery, and he is writing on what is the resistance, the shadow government being formed by Barack Obama. And first, Paul, thank you very much, and my congratulations on outstanding reporting. I wonder to what degree the national liberal media will even pay an ounce of attention. Will they have the courage, the principle, to report on the things that you and I are talking about here tonight?
Well, of course not. I mean, you've got an Obama-friendly media, and they're going to try and cover this up and keep it on the QT as long as they can so that Obama can get this, like I was calling it in the column, a shadow government, build this up. I don't think Republicans know what they're up against here. He's quietly building this shadow opposition government to sabotage Trump and Republicans as well and their policies, while at the same time saving his own legacy. And he's doing all this through a radical Alinsky group that he founded called Organizing for Action, OFA.
Right.
And they've got an army of agitators, and they are going to they're fanning out. They're going to hit Republicans even harder next week when they go home for recess back to their home districts.
Right. And we're watching some of that unfold in the congressional town hall meetings. some of it being styled as Republicans and conservatives rising up against their Republican or conservative representatives, which is utter nonsense, as we both know. How serious do you believe this is? We're talking about, as you suggest in the column, something north of 30,000 people in OFA. And you know, they didn't even tip their hat. It could have been Organizing for America, but it had to be for action. Where is this headed?
Right. Well, they took it out of the Obama campaign in 2012. It was part of that campaign, and they turned it into a 501c4 so they don't have to show their donors. And what they're doing, so basically starts as a training center, and they put these aren't like the rabble from Occupy Wall Street or even Black Lives Matter. These are professionally trained agitators. They're schooled in Alinsky's Rat Rules for Radicals tactics at a program that lasts 6 weeks. And that's about 32,000 who have gone through that, over 32,000. They've got another 25,000 who are under training now, and they've got another big training summit coming up in March. And we haven't seen the worst of these protests. These are really going to hit hard. But Obama's the guy who's behind all this. He's the mastermind. If you look at his website, down in the little print, his new website, post-presidency, little agate type down there, two organizations listed. One is, I don't know if you can see this, OFA, Organizing for Action. The other is the Obama Foundation. And eventually, he wants to merge them. And if they can get the DNC, which Obama wants to get his guy Tom Perez, this radical civil rights chief he had, in the helm at the DNC, you get all this together. And then they get the proprietary database of the voters from OFA, which is licensed, and they've never shared that before with the DNC. You get the email lists, millions of Obama supporters from OFA, and you get the donor lists. And once the DNC gets that, you have a superstructure. And that's going to be a formidable organizing infrastructure.
And around that organizing superstructure that will be unprecedented, you already have many, if not most, of the technology. The large technology firms are already in alliance with him, as is the national left-wing media, as is the national left-wing academia, our colleges and universities, and of course
really
the left-wing media. So it is an extraordinary development, and they mean business. When it comes to obstructing and bringing down this administration. Paul, we would like you to come back as soon as you can and to continue the discussion on this, because this is the critical issue right now, I believe, facing the country. Paul,
that's
Stern,
right. That's right.
Thanks so much for being with us.
This is highly organized, and this is to be taken seriously. But one thing I want to point out that I hope President Trump will do very, very soon. He has an awesome agenda for our country. He has, in the last month, kept his promises, and he is fighting a deplorable left-wing media and liberals. And here is my advice. President Trump, put the blinders on and go forward with your agenda. Tune out these people. They are trying to distract you. Their number one goal, of course, is impeachment. But they're doing everything they can to distract him from implementing his agenda. And after so long, it's time to tune these people out. I'm not saying don't take them seriously, but you need to go forward to implement what you want to do, and don't let them bother you, antagonize you, because distraction is a tactic, and that's what it's all about. There is a second report on this particular shadow government by Paul Sperry. I want you to hear this before Annie comes on. Here we are on the cross in the desert, Obama shadow government soundbite number two.
When protests erupted over President Trump's refugee executive order, former President Barack Obama said, quote, he's heartened by the demonstrations. Was that it? Well, our next guest says that was a message to his troops, an army of agitators with one goal, sabotage Trump's presidency. New York Post columnist and author of The Great American Bank Robbery, Paul Sperry, joins us. Paul, you point to Organizing for America. What is Organizing America doing with these protesters, and what's the president linked to that organization?
Yeah, all these protests against Trump, they're not spontaneous. They're pre-manufactured by OFA, and OFA is Obama. OFA is the Organizing for Action. It's a nonprofit that's officially tied to Obama.
But the guy's windsurfing. What is it? Is he really organizing?
Oh yeah, he's behind all these protests that are breaking out across the country. They want you to believe that this is some broad-based sudden uprising against Trump's policies, but it's not. It's just Obama and his radical activists.
How many are involved? How many are involved in OFA?
Well, according to their tax records I looked up, they've got an army of over 32,000 hardcore Alinsky-trained agitators, and they're training thousands more as we speak. They've got a big training summit coming up in March. And so basically Obama is building a shadow government to sabotage Trump at every turn, and he's got an army to do it.
Like when something was up when Jason Chaffetz wins his district with 73% of the vote, yet at a town hall, 70% of the people at that town hall were screaming at him over Obamacare.
He's in a safe Republican district. Yeah, that wasn't spontaneous, of course. That's all from the right out of the training manual that OFA has put out. I've got a copy of it. And they actually have a whole section in here on how to target these town halls and ambush Republicans who go back to and hold these town hall meetings. It says, get seated and spread out. Head into the venue a bit early to grab seats at the front of the room, but do not all sit together. Sit by yourself or in groups of two and spread out throughout the room. This will help reinforce the impression of broad consensus.
And if you talk to the administration offline and even sometimes on camera, they are stunned by the amount of uprising, the fact that these protests haven't stopped. You're not, because you know where it starts. You know where the foundation is.
Yeah, I mean, the Trump White House, these Republican lawmakers, they are just completely blindsided. They don't know where this is coming from. The opposition and the media say this is organic. It's
gotcha.
Not organic. This is where this is all coming from. It's coming from Obama. I mean, he's basically set up an opposition government. And boy, I tell you, there's no precedent for this. I mean, this is the first president who's actually staying behind in Washington, at least for the last,
Paul,
within the last 100 years.
And we just touched on the surface, which your investigation has revealed. Organizing for America, Barack Obama versus Donald Trump, it continues. Thanks so much.
I wanted to play that second soundbite. I thought it encapsulated a little bit better of their tactics at these town hall meetings. And so the next time you see these protests and hear this hoop and wah that's going on, know that there is a definite plan and purpose for it. It's not just spontaneous. It's not something that just was quickly organized, but that it is targeted purposely and planned well in advance. And so this will continue. Unfortunately, for the next 3 or more years, because the media cannot stand the fact that this president would dare to challenge them, that this president would not be politically correct like Obama, but that would stand up against the Republicans as well, some of them establishment, and get in their face. This is something they're not used to, and frankly speaking, they're afraid. They're afraid that this president will succeed in everything he's promised to do, and that means the end of them. Well, right now on The Cross in the Desert, I have a very, very special guest. I want to welcome to The Cross in the Desert, once again, my good friend Annie Cyrus, director, producer of The Glass Off Gang, and now national director of the American Truth Project. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, Annie. So glad that you took out some time to join me on the program today.
Always a pleasure, Randy. Thanks for having me on.
You are a very involved and busy lady. I was mentioning to our listening audience the things you're involved in, and all of us know of your work as director, producer of the Glass Off Gang, of The Unknown, where you educate us about the ideology and just the horrible tactics of Islam against women. And now you are involved in something that I'm so happy you're doing. It's the National Director of American Truth Project, Annie. And I want you to share with us what that means. What is American Truth Project? Who's involved? And what is the alternative they will bring to the fake media?
Well, of course. American Truth Project, also known as ATP, is a new nonprofit organization, 501C, that we basically just launched on February 1st. The main person, I would say, the founder of ATP is Mr. Barry Nussbaum, who is a very well-known domestic and foreign policy expert here in America. And the main reason we decided to go ahead and launch ATP is, just like rest of Americans, we were just fed up with all the lies that media is feeding us, plus all the wrong information that are available online nowadays, translating what is going on with our politics. What I mean by that is not everybody knows every detail, including myself, of what every deal would mean and what every deal would mean. So what we are planning to do at ATP is, first of all, we are going to bring the truth and facts of what is happening daily. So instead of for people to watch mainstream media and guessing if they're telling the truth or not, they can just tune in at ATP and take a look at the actual facts and reports of the daily news. And also we have Barry Nussbaum, who's going to do the weekly program, analyzing every step, every order, every law, and every regulation that is going to either come in or leave our politics, for people to understand exactly what are the steps that President Trump is taking to make America great again.
That sounds awesome, Annie, because you're right. You don't know what you're hearing these days, if it's true or not. And I'm sure you saw the classic historic meltdown just this past Thursday when President Trump at his news conference lashed out at the fake media. Your thoughts on our president and how he's confronting the fake media?
To be honest, as it was happening, I felt so proud. Not just because President Trump was calling him out for what they are, but because finally we have a president who is not afraid to be hated by the media, who is not going to butter them up to get a better angle of his face on the media. It was so refreshing to know that he will stand up and he will force them to either correct themselves or they will have limited access to further information as far as important news goes. Don't get me wrong, though. I'm not saying they're going to take this serious. No, they are so used to it. And they are being paid by other side, very well paid, that they don't need to take this matter serious. They will continue to be corrupted. And they will continue to cover up whatever is going on with the left and Hillary Foundation and now Obama Foundation. But it's still good to know that the voice is being heard and President Trump is letting them know he knows, we know, and we're not going to buy into it anymore.
This is why I think American Truth Project is going to be so, so important to filter through all of the lies and all of the just the ridiculous scenarios that the media comes up with, like this connection with Russia and all of the stuff that's going on with the leaked intelligence, which is against the law. Whereas you and American Truth Project can come along and say, look, you hear all of these stories, let me tell you the truth about it. And you're going to offer not just an alternative, but you're going to interpret and analyze what is said and get to the roots of where it's coming from and begin to educate people that listen to the news, how to understand what's being said, how to filter through the false teachings of the news. So this is very educational. This is something that has been so important and so needed, and thank God that you have something right now like this.
I would absolutely agree with you. We literally need ATP out there today. It is getting more and more confusing every day, especially when it comes to foreign policy, that the relationship with Israel, the relationship with Iran, the relationship with Russia, all of this is becoming more and more confusing daily for American people to catch up. On top of that, they have to realize which one is the lie, which one is the truth, which one has a fact, where is the proof. So American Truth Project is basically working every day, every hour to gather all that information with the proof, with the paperwork, with the trail of evidence to show American people what is the reality. Don't panic. Half of what you hear is lies. We are not going to start a war, or we're not going to be bombed by another. You see, all that fear that mainstream media is trying to spread in order to make Trump look bad, all of that will be cleared by American Truth Project. We're going to literally cover all of that with proof to give a peace of mind to American people that, no, you didn't make a mistake. No, President Trump is still a great president for this country.
Yes. Now, right before you came on, I was playing a couple of soundbite stories about this shadow government that Obama has going behind the scenes. And Paul Sperry from the New York Post, I think it was, broke this story and talked about that he is training this organization he's involved with trains over 32,000 hardcore militant liberals to disrupt and distract our president. And so what you're saying to me is so important. And what you're going to be doing is so important because there are people behind the scenes, Annie, that are deliberately planning the overthrow of President Trump. And American Truth Project will be right there on the front lines to expose groups like this with the shadow government.
Absolutely. Not just expose, to also provide solution. If any of your listeners go to our website, americantruthproject.org, they will see that we mention the issues and then we offer solutions, how we can stop all of this. The call to action that we will have monthly. See, one point, there are many organizations out there who are calling out the problem, who are showing us the issue and the problem, but they're not really offering any solution. The great thing about American Truth Project is we have solution. We are a group of experts in different areas that all together in one room, we can actually offer solution to the problem. And that's what makes us, I think, in a way very different and unique from the rest of the organizations who are working to give the news and the reality and the truth to people. We also offer solutions.
I think that's very important. Now, you come from a very important perspective on this whole idea of fake media and the control of the media. You once lived in Iran several years ago where the news media was controlled by the government, and the government told Iranians what they wanted them to know and hear, and they kept the real truth from them. So as you look back in Iran when you used to live there, and you look at what's happening here with the media, this has to really concern you that the same thing that's happening in Iran on a daily basis, the control of the media, very soon could happen here unless a group like American Truth Project gets there and reveals the truth and finds solutions.
Well, that's the thing, Randy. It's, first of all, to this day, the Islamic Republic of Iran's media is still being controlled. It's been 38 years that is being controlled. And what has scared me the most is exactly February 11th of this year, 2017, I actually did a video on this subject. As when I woke up and I noticed on all websites, from right to left to center, all of them, there are pictures of Iranian people walking, marching the streets of Tehran and other provinces. Burning American flags and burning, Israeli flag and all that. And they were all titled Iranian people protesting against President Trump. I'm like, wait, what? I jumped on my camera. I'm like, wait, people, February 11th is the day Iranian people celebrate the Islamic Revolution. For 38 years, they have been burning American flag. It has nothing to do with our president. And that was basically last thing for me. I was like, wait, it woke me up 100%. I'm like, wait, it's already happening. Our media is already feeding our people a complete lie. They're telling our people these pictures are anti-Trump rallies, but they aren't. I know, and I can see the banners when they're congratulating each other for the victory of Islamic revolution in Iran, but our media, and again, I repeat, from right to left to center, all of them were publishing the same story. I was like, no, this cannot happen. And on that video, I specifically say, this is why we need American Truth Project, because I'm part of American Truth Project, and I will be covering mm-hmm. the Middle Eastern news, and I will tell you when mm-hmm. they're lying and when they're grabbing pictures and putting an irrelevant story behind it.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I've talked to Iranians, and they will tell you, they will tell me, that these protests that go on the celebration of the anniversary of the Islamic, you know, revolution, these are paid protesters that fear the government. They are told they better show up and do this. And the point being that not all Iranians feel this way about America. It's these select few that the media focuses in on, and these select few that are protesting are forced by the government to show up and do that.
Well, the reality behind it is, I always said, 80% of Iranian people have nothing against Israel. They got nothing against UK, and they have absolutely nothing against America. But here's what it is. In Iran, 90% of the people who do those rallies or celebration or marching the street, whatever we call it, they are registered. If they don't show up, they will be mm-hmm. kicked out of universities. If they don't show up, mm-hmm. if let's say a single mother who's under, you know, support of government, they're going to lose that monthly support. If they don't show up, they will lose their job. So, yes, mm-hmm. I wish I could say they're even paid. They're not. They are forced to show up, mm-hmm. to walk around, mm-hmm. chant Death to America and burn the flag, because if not, they will be homeless people on the streets without any life. That's how extreme the control of this ideology goes.
Exactly. I want us to focus in on the things that American Truth Project will be handling in the next few months as you launch this project out of there. And one of the big focus issues that we're dealing with right now is the so-called Muslim ban, okay? We have heard this since the implementation of the executive order that Trump is out to ban Muslims from coming here. And nothing could be further from the truth, Annie, because the countries involved in this ban represent maybe 4% of the Muslim population of the world. And in matter of fact, these same countries were on the list that Obama had. And there was no outrage when he kept Iraqi refugees from coming in. It's because it's President Trump. So one of the issues that I'm sure you're going to be dealing with is the absolute opposition to this ban. And it comes down to this, Annie. The safety and security of our country. President Trump is making good on his promises. And you have watched many Iranians who live here speaking out against our president, and you've had a few things to say about that issue.
Absolutely. Again, number one problem we're facing about this issue is the news is not representing the correct information. This is not a ban on Muslims. Again, I would ask your listeners to go to our YouTube channel, American Truth Project on YouTube. Literally, our last episode was to cover this very issue. This isn't a ban on Muslims. No. This is a temporary, perfect vetting system. Because of our relationship with these countries, our government has absolutely no way to check these people's background, including myself. When I came to America, I waited my term. I waited close to 3 years until I was completely confirmed that I am not a terrorist, I am not a practicing Sharia lover, that I am coming to this country looking for a better life, you know, all that was confirmed, and then I came in. I actually was asked by a lot of my fellow Iranians that, how can you stand by this decision? If it was today, you wouldn't be able to come in. And I kept saying, yes, I would. If I got nothing to hide, and if I'm not coming to ruin America, why would I be worried? Does it take a little longer for them to come in? Yes. But at least they should be happy that there is a very decent vetting system in place, so they're coming into a safe country. But you see, the media is twisting this whole thing, saying because, and this is the most interesting part, by the way, where they say President Trump is so racist. I didn't know Islam is a race and Muslims being against them is a racism, but okay, whatever they say. A ban on Muslims. No, it isn't. It's basically a ban on people who are coming from any country that has a strict, direct ties to terrorism. And guess what? We all know, as Iranians or not, Islamic Republic of Iran is number one supporter, financially supporter of terrorism. So we better stop getting so offended and start being realistic. This is a very smart move from our president.
I totally agree with you, and I work with refugees, which you do too. I speak out for them. I write letters to Immigration Board. I support them. I've lost friends that question my integrity because of this issue, but I'm with you 100%. You came in legally. You did the right thing. You set an example. This is how, if you have nothing to hide, you have patience, you let the government vet you, you do the right thing. It's very apparent, Annie. Liberals do not care about our national security. Liberals don't care really about refugees. They're always talking about refugees and protesting, but none of them are really involved in doing anything for refugees. They are just spitting out the current narrative of calling the president racist and all of these things. But one of the goals of American Truth Project, as you just well mentioned, is to get the truth out about what this ban is all about.
Absolutely. And again, not only to get the truth out about it, we also analyze it. We are doing a follow-up story on it. We are explaining every detail of how it works, why does it work, and we offer a solution. Again, this is how we will face this vetting process. And you see, aside liberals being who they are, we all know who they are, one of the problems we're facing is a lot of conservatives are being concerned with this. Because obviously, if they stand by the decision, they will be labeled racist, and they don't want to be labeled racist. But we are helping them understand this process, and we're helping them understand why this is a good decision and why they should stand by this decision.
Now, one of the areas you're going to be an expert on and covering is the Middle East, and the current administration has got a goal to solve the problem, to solve the travesty of the Middle East that the Obama administration has left Trump. He called it, they've left him an incredible mess. You're going to be focusing in on the human rights aspects in the Middle East. What are the issues you want to bring to the American people that they need to know specifically about the problems in the Middle East, which would include Israel, Syria, and the things that they need to know so that we understand what's going on?
The very first thing that I will be focusing on ATP, American Truth Project, is the actual issue of what is being represented today by the media, which is the equality in Islamic countries. And one very important fact that I have to cover is that, wait, no, there is no equality. There is a minimum human rights. However, there is no rights for women. I think that's a very, considering this whole women's march and how they're growing and how they're spreading other and complete lies, it's my duty at American Truth Project to come out and say, this is the truth about women's rights. All of these women who are marching the streets looking ridiculous are feeding you lies. They're not standing for a Muslim woman. They're not loving Muslim women. They don't even know what it means to be a Muslim woman. Mm-hmm. This is what it means, and this is what you need to know. Again, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't love women because they come from Middle Eastern countries. No, but be aware what you're about to face. That's the number one I will be covering. And the second thing they need to know is the separation of people and government. Again, one problem we have is when our mainstream media generalize the country. No. The government of all these Islamic countries are Islamic states. And then the people under those governments, majority of them are just prisoners. As soon as they have the chance, they will leave the ideology. That's another important aspect that I think, again, because it's area of expertise for me, I need to cover and I need to shed light on for American people to understand.
This is very good. Now, you mentioned the women's movement. Did it shock and surprise you that one of the organizers of this movement was a pro-Sharia law woman named Linda Sarsour, who has ties to terrorist groups? I just could not believe these are these women crying out for human rights, and yet one of the principal organizers is a Muslim woman who advocates Sharia law. Your thoughts on that?
Truth be told, it didn't shock me, nor did it surprise me. I still think she's not the only one. I believe she's the one person, but I'm willing and I'm working on proving this, that there are more Muslim practicing women behind these marches and movements, because this is what Islamization looks like. You bring on a woman like her, Linda, and you bring her on and you let her do the promotion for you, it becomes super normal. You know, you normalize the situation for American people, and then you have 1 million women follow her blindly. You see, this is the issue. What surprised me was the 1 million women who followed her blindly. That's what surprised me. And it basically, I was so angry to know that from normal people all the way to crazy famous celebrities standing behind this woman without knowing anything about what this woman stands for.
You have celebrities like Lindsay Lohan talking about reading the Quran. I don't think she knows four words in the Quran, and she's supporting an ideology that will destroy her humanity and her rights. And like you said, the millions that followed her, this has to really frighten you. You're thinking back to Iran when the revolution happened so quickly and the Shah was forced into exile because an ideology, a movement was birthed and millions followed blindly, believing that Khomeini was bringing freedom and he brought bondage. And you've seen the remnants of what goes on there. So this has to frighten you to see that many people being so lied to by the media and so involved in a movement that will destroy their human rights.
Well, that's exactly what they do. Look, there was a tweet from Linda where she said, oh, imagine when you wake up and all your credit cards are, I believe, APR free and all your loans are, I don't know, paid off or something like that. As soon as I saw that, it was literally deja vu, Randy. The very first promise Khomeini had for Iranian people was, I'm going to give everybody a free housing. And that's what got people to follow. They're like, oh, you know, it's too expensive, hard to live life, economy is bad. Let's bring this guy in. At least we have a free house. None of them thought about it twice to say, how is he going to manage to do that? And let's not forget, we're talking about a country that is extremely rich. You know, Iran is very rich because of the oil we have. Now, in America, she's doing the same thing. She's literally promising what's impossible, just like Bernie Sanders did. And look at how many people were following him blindly without even thinking twice, how is it possible to get all this free stuff? And that comes, that again, that's where American Truth Project is extremely needed today, because we have many people out there who are not familiar with the system and how it works. So as soon as somebody make a promise, they jump on it. So we need American Truth Project to sit there and say, hey, listen, people, this is how it works. This is why it's impossible to have free stuff in this country or any country for that matter. So stay calm. Don't get excited and don't buy into all these empty promises. Yes, I am terrified, to be honest. It's happening too fast, and our people are way behind. They're not catching up fast enough.
Well, I like the fact that you're interpreting what's going on and you're offering the solution and you're guiding people in the right way. And the fact is, one of the truths about this whole movement is that these Sharia law representatives hijack these liberal movements. They hijack them for their own purposes, and they implement their own strategy in this movement. And one of the goals of American Truth Projects, which I'm sure you're going to do, is to expose, to educate, and then to teach people about how to resist this and how to look at the news objectively.
Absolutely. Because, again, we are a group of people who every single one of us have experienced part of this disaster. Again, if you go back to the history of Islamic revolution in Iran, for those of you listeners who don't know, this was not an Islamic revolution. The revolution started with a left-wing group who wanted to complain about the system. As soon as they grew enough, Khomeini hijacked the revolution, and it became the Islamic revolution. Deja vu, just like what you explained. And this is where we come in and say, this is what's happening, people. This is not about right or left. This is literally about Islamization of America. And they are doing it in a way where you don't even notice it. You will wake up one day and realize, oops, it took place.
Absolutely. Well, Annie, our time is rapidly running out, but I want people to connect with you because this is such an important service that you're offering. And they need to know where to go to find out more about American Truth, to find out more about what your role is going to be in this organization. So tell us how we can connect with you the quickest and easiest way.
Absolutely. The fastest way to connect with me directly is my Facebook page, Aynaz, A-Y-N-A-Z, Annie Cyrus. But if you want to know more about American Truth Project, the best place is to go to americantruthproject.org, or you can go to Facebook and look up American Truth Project. Those are the best two places you can know more about us, you can get involved, and you can basically start being informed.
And also, I would add to that, Live Up to Freedom, and you have your still have your videos, you still have the things you do with the Glassoff Gang, you still have lots of really important educational material, videos, articles that we need to know about.
Absolutely, yes. We still have liveuptofreedom.com, where people can read more about Sharia and Islam. And the Glassoff Gang YouTube channel is still active.
Okay. Well, I tell you, I thank you so much for taking time out of your really busy life to educate us. You're always such a blessing to this program, and they couldn't have chosen a better representative. You have the experience, the background. You know what this is all about, and you will be a great asset, and I really look forward to the reports you're going to be putting on the page. It's National Director Annie Cyrus of the AmericanTruthProject.org. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct. I appreciate that. Thank you, Randy.
And blessings to you, Annie. Thank you so much for being my guest today on The Cross in the Desert. Look forward to having you again in the future.
Absolutely. Just let me know when. You know that.
Okay. That is the beautiful voice of Annie Anaz Cyrus, just such a good friend, and she is dedicated to the truth in media. Dedicated to the truth in Islam and human rights, and it's always such a joy to have her on the program. Please go check out AmericanTruthProject.org. Go to her Facebook page. There are links to get there, and you will be informed. And thank you again, Annie Cyrus. Going to transition right here to a song by Matt Redman, which is going to set up my Bible teaching today on the Beatitudes. Here is Matt Redman on the cross in the desert with a song called Mercy.
I will kneel in the dust at the foot of the cross where mercy paid for me. Where the wrath I deserve, it is gone, it has passed, your blood has hidden me. Mercy, mercy.
I'll sing your hallelujah.
at the foot of the cross, where mercy paid for me.
The amazing gift that Matt Redman has to draw you into God's presence and God's word, the song called Mercy, it fits so very well with the study I've been doing for the past several weeks on the Beatitudes. Been taking us through Matthew chapter 5 on these inner principles for kingdom living. The Gospel of Matthew has introduced Jesus as the King, the promised Messiah. And in Matthew chapter 5, we have the King sitting on the mountain. His disciples come to him, and he is teaching them principles, kingdom principles for living. And we have gone through some amazing, transforming, life-transforming teachings from Jesus in these past weeks. I want to go back to Matthew chapter 5 today and continue on the teaching of the Beatitudes. We're going to do just a little bit of a review. I want to read to you those first 11 verses to set the context, and then we'll continue with our teaching. Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 11 from the English Standard Version of the Bible. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evils against you falsely on my account." These are amazing teachings from our Lord. He is teaching us as kingdom citizens what the Christian life will look like. And in the first Beatitudes, these internal principles now become visible by the way that we interact with other people. I want you to see that important point. You see, those that are poor in spirit recognize their spiritual bankruptcy and their need for God's grace. And because they recognize they're poor in spirit, they mourn over their sinfulness. That's a constant daily activity of the Christian. And through their mourning, they become meek, teachable, humble. Blessed are the meek. And because they mourn and they recognize their condition, and then they are meek and teachable, they hunger. We hunger daily and thirst for God's righteousness in our lives and in the world. And today we are going to talk about of mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. I want us to set the context here so that we understand a few things. Jesus is teaching here in Matthew 5 that the Christian, the disciple, the follower, is a person that loves God with his heart and not his external religious practice. You see, the Pharisees and the scribes had so deceived the masses with their outward religiosity and religious rituals. It was all a form of godliness on the outside. But what Jesus is saying is what really counts is what's on the inside. And that's why he's dealing with the heart. He's dealing with our spiritual condition. These are principles that we need to abide by and learn. And in these first four Beatitudes, he has talked about the poor in spirit, the mourners, the meek and those that hunger and thirst. And if you are one of those kingdom citizens that daily lives out these principles, it's going to manifest in the way you live. Unlike the Pharisees and the scribes who had a form of religiosity and a religious ritual, but no internal reality, Jesus is saying, if you abide in my words, you will live out a certain way. It's going to reflect on how you treat other people. And that's the important point we need to get a hold of. This supposed righteousness, Jesus wanted to attack and go straight to the heart of the matter. He wanted to put on the truth. He didn't want his followers to have a form of religion or a peculiar way of acting, an outward facade. Christianity is something that happens to us at the very center of our being, and from there it flows out into the activities of life. God has never been interested in rituals. He has only been interested in the truth of our hearts. And he's not interested in superficial spiritual activity. So the first four Beatitudes focus in on internal principles about how we stand before God. The second four, which we're going to talk about today, are still internal principles, but they deal with how we treat and relate to others. Look at it this way. They are the fruit of what's going on in our heart. If we are poor in spirit, if we mourn over sinfulness, if we're gentle and meek, and if we hunger and thirst for God's righteousness, we will act that way in regards to other people and how we treat other people. Blessed are the merciful, Jesus says, for they shall obtain mercy. Let's take a quick look at some of the key scriptures about God's mercy. Here is a good one for us to remember and really memorize. Ephesians chapter 2, verses 4 through 5, but because of his great love for us, God, rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ even when we were dead in transgressions. It is by grace you have been saved. Psalm 51, verses 1 through 2, have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. Blot out my transgressions, wash away all my iniquity, and cleanse me from sin. So it's very, very important to know something of the grace of God. Who is a God like you, Micah 7, verse 18, who pardons sin and forgives the transgression of the remnant of his inheritance? You do not stay angry forever, but delight to show mercy. So important. And of course, actually one of my favorite ones that I'm sure that you have memorized, the Lord's loving kindness never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Lamentations chapter 3, verse 22. What is it about this mercy that Jesus wants to get across to us? Well, we tend to equate mercy with God's forgiveness of sin, but it means much more than that. Mercy goes beyond compassion. It goes beyond sympathy. It means sympathy and compassion in action toward everyone in need. That's what our Lord is talking about here. And there's a certain word, eleemosyne, is the Greek word. And it comes against the false religion, the outward religion. And it talks about a tangible way, a genuine compassion toward other people. So when you think of what Jesus is teaching here, blessed are the merciful, he's seeing mercy in this light. Mercy is seeing a man without food and giving him food. That's compassion in action. Mercy is seeing a person begging for love and giving him love. Mercy is seeing someone lonely and giving him company. Mercy is meeting the need, not just feeling it. In other words, when we look on the internet and think about the human rights and the way people are treated, for instance, in Iran, my response is not just only to pray and to feel bad about that. It is to get involved with the lives of Iranians, to write for them, to speak for them, to do what I can to alleviate their suffering. And this is just one example of mercy in action, not just empathy and sympathy for something. So we need to look, though, at mercy and forgiveness. They are related. Forgiveness comes from the fountain of mercy. You cannot think of mercy without expressing itself in forgiveness. And you cannot think of forgiveness without its source, which is mercy. But forgiveness is not the only expression of mercy. Forgiveness flows out of mercy. So that's why Jesus says to forgive your enemies, to love your enemies. That would be antithetical. Think of it this way. Jesus is talking to a crowd of people at a time when the Roman Empire is imposing their rule on them. And the Romans, they were not merciful. Romans loved their justice. They exacted revenge. They admired vengeance. And they would look upon someone who was forgiving and compassionate, they would look upon that as a sign of weakness. And that's the same way in our time. Mercy, compassion, in many ways, is looked upon as weakness. How can you forgive that person? How can you love that person? You're weak. And in ancient times, slaves, women, and many children were treated like useless garbage. A master could maim and kill them at any time. It's no different from today. So we live in a world of revenge, a world of hatred, a world of just cruelty. And for you and me to suddenly say, well, I'm going to be merciful and compassionate, goes against the grain, the flow of the world system. And that's exactly the context that Jesus taught this in a world of cruelty and revenge. And do you see the transcending power of God's word? It's not bound by culture. It transcends culture. It speaks to our time. For Christians to show mercy, not just to feel sorry, but to get involved in the lives of people with genuine compassion, that takes work and dedication. So this is not a passive command. It is an active one. You see, Jesus is deliberately teaching this because, first of all, he wants you to understand that if you're truly poor in spirit, that you mourn over your sin, and that you are meek and humble and teachable, that you thirst for hunger and righteousness, the way people will see that that's true is the way you treat other people. If you're really all of those things, then you will be merciful. Now, excuse me, let's be honest here. We don't feel like being merciful when we're wronged, and we certainly don't feel like forgiving when we're hated and persecuted. Those are feelings, though. And Jesus is saying this goes beyond feelings. This is a practice. When we look at the character of God and the character of Christ, we think, well, now, wait a minute. Jesus says, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Well, wait a minute. Jesus was the most compassionate person on the planet. He healed the sick. He raised the dead. What kind of mercy did he receive? Jesus received execution on a cross. He didn't receive mercy for all of the good and the love that he demonstrated and the compassion he showed. How? How would we expect to receive mercy? A very good question. And yet, the Bible teaches that is our calling. that regardless of how the sinful humanity reacts when we show mercy, that is our calling. We are to show mercy. Jesus taught so much of this in his parables. He wants us to know this is a way of life for us. And so I think what it would be best is to understand. Jesus taught the parable in Matthew 18, where the man who was a king called his governors to him, and one man had embezzled all his money and had nothing to show, and the king says he's going to be punished. And the man falls on his face and pleads, and the king is merciful and forgives the man of his debt. And that's a beautiful picture of mercy. Jesus is teaching this in a parable. But the man who was shown mercy, who had just been forgiven, went out and found someone who owed him a pittance, strangled that man, and threw him in a debtor's prison until he paid everything. And this same man who was shown mercy refused to be merciful. And the parable ends with the Lord calling in that unmerciful man and chastening him until he learned to be merciful. What does that say to us? This is very important. This is why Jesus taught this in parables. He wants us to understand that this is not an option. Mercy is who we are. Mercy is who God is. The righteous shows mercy and gives, Psalm 37:21. It is so important to understand that God takes seriously this practice of mercy. Again, another parable, Luke 18. There's a publican beating his breast, and the Pharisee is standing next to him. He's the tax collector. He's bragging to God, I keep this law, I do this, I abide by ceremonies, I tithe all that I possess. But, and he goes on to say, I'm not like this other man. This publican, he's got his head down. He's beating on his breast. He won't even look up and say, God be what? He says, God be merciful to me, a sinner. This man is not bragging about his spiritual condition. He's cursing his condition. He's crying out for God's mercy. This man is spiritually bankrupt. He's hungering. He's mourning. He's meek. And he received God's mercy. You see, that's the picture of you and me. We're like that publican, and the religious person unfortunately represents a lot of Christians today. When I look at the scriptures and I see what this beatitude is teaching, I see God's mercy endures forever. Psalm 62:12, unto thee, O Lord, belongs mercy. So filled with the character of God and his mercy. So important that we understand something of what Jesus is teaching here. So how? How do we put this into practice? We want to learn God's word, but we want to do what God's word says. Well, it should show up in our relationships. And we should never hold a grudge, never retaliate, never take vengeance, never flaunt someone's weakness, never make something or someone's failure, and never recite it as sin. And so, in short, mercy, though, if we practice it, withholds abusive, manipulative, vengeful, selfish ways, the ways that people treat each other frequently. I want you to see this in action in several ways. Remember the story of Stephen, the first Christian martyr, if we call him. They were stoning him. They were killing him. And Stephen in Acts chapter 7, verse 60 said, Lord, do not hold this sin against them. He was forgiving them as he was being stoned. And so we see that mercy in action. We look at this beatitude. And we say this, the one who has received mercy will be merciful. The one who has received forgiveness will be forgiving. If you are a merciful person, you are giving evidence of being a child of God, so that every time you sin, God is forgiving you. Every time you have a need, he meets it. He takes care of you and me. He pours mercy upon mercy upon mercy upon us. We see our God faithful to show mercy, and therefore, we too need to be merciful. This is not easy. Frankly, it's impossible apart from the grace of God. And that's why, as we go through these Beatitudes, this is important that we look at our present life as a Christian in light of what Jesus has taught and confront ourselves with God's word, asking for his pardon, his forgiveness, his grace, his mercy, to live in a way that honors him. And so these Beatitudes are very instructive to us because they show us how a child of God is to live as a kingdom citizen. And so today we've learned a little bit about God's mercy, just a little bit, because we will spend a lifetime learning and experiencing God's mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. I really appreciate you spending time with me today. Next week, we're going to learn about the pure in heart, seeing God. Every one of these Beatitudes are so rich in meaning and in application. It is going to revolutionize our Christian lives to live these principles out before a world that needs to see Christ in us, before a world that is broken, that needs the grace of God, that needs to come to Christ to find truth, to find forgiveness, to find healing. And when we live what Jesus taught in the Beatitudes, we are displaying that mercy of God to a hurting and a broken world. And so I thank every one of you today for coming alongside me on the cross in the desert, joining me in the chat room. Thank you, every one of you, Ava, everyone that came along. I want to thank Annie Cyrus, a tremendous, tremendous guest. I really look forward to her involvement with the ATP, the American Truth Project. I want to say God bless you. Thank you so much for your attention today. I will see you again on the Thursday edition of The Cross in the Desert. Have an awesome week. Great.